Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm talking for the second time to Yad Jassy, whose name I would like to spell for you because I think you'll want to get her books, and the name is not immediately obvious. The name is spelled G-Y-A-S-I, Jassy, Yad Jassy, Y-A-A. And I found her two books, The Newer Transcendent Kingdom and Homegoing, to be extraordinary penetrations into areas that are very difficult to address, perhaps especially difficult to address in novels. In the more recent book, Transcendent Kingdom, we're exploring the difference between religion and science in their ability to provide solutions to the problems of depression and addiction. Do you feel in your own life that these two arenas are equally valid?
I do feel in my own life that these two arenas are equally valid. Like Gifty, I grew up in the church, as they say. I grew up Pentecostal. And though I also, like Gifty, ended up leaving the church, I think that that kind of initial framework, that way of leaving space in your life for things that are mysterious, things that fill you with awe, the concept of faith, like I've always found those ideas to be quite beautiful, even as I have struggled with other aspects of my religion. And so, you know, I think I've kind of kept in touch with that, even as I myself have kind of started to be more interested in things like science.
Well, it's fascinating. In Transcendent Kingdom, the great quality of the novel is not to set religion and science at each other's throats, but rather to explore where the two can combine to provide a way of looking at life that is not easy for a scientist, that is to say, religion, and a way of looking at life that is not easy for a person of the church, that is to say, science. Now, in this book, you mention that people, you know that you've been in communities where evolution is still not studied. People speak to the protagonist, Gifty, as if she must be kidding if she's talking about Jesus. And it's a very powerful opposition that is treated as a natural facet of the world.
I think for Gifty, part of her fascination with faith, part of what drew her to the faith, was not just the fact that she kind of inherited it because of her mother's own devoutness, but I think she was invested in the idea of trying to be good. And ultimately, the tenets of her religion were ones that focused on goodness. I think that Gifty is a child who really wants to be good and seeks out avenues to kind of try to create some amount of control out of the chaos that is surrounding her.
In the first book, there's a character whose name is Ness. She's called Ness, but it was because her mother said, "My goodness," when she was born. And so her name really is Goodness. What do issues like goodness mean to you as a writer?
Well, I think I'm interested in it in part because we are sometimes led to believe that goodness or its opposite, are these kind of inherent aspects of a person's personality, that something is good or it's not good, that a person is good or not good. And we don't like to believe that we're thinking that way, and yet we are kind of walking around making judgments about the people that we see. And part of the work of any fiction writer, I think, is to kind of complicate characters so that you recognize by the end of it that everyone is capable of anything, that there's a kind of full range of possibility within each of these characters and within each of us. And so it's not black and white. And so for a character like Gifty, goodness is something that she's always striving for, but the question is whether or not it's fully achievable, or achievable in the way that she thinks of it.
For some people, questions of goodness and morality have become, dare I say it, corny. They're very important questions to me, and it's very exciting to read a contemporary novelist who's exploring these issues. In both books, there's an extraordinary exploration of what might be called a cold mother. And I'm curious, because I don't run into that mother in fiction very frequently, I'm not asking autobiographical questions, what leads you to an interest in this as a writer?
I really like the idea of having characters who are kind of afraid of what they'll become. And I think a mother-daughter relationship that's difficult kind of presents the opportunity to think through that. Gifty, as you said, has a cold mother, and so much of her fear, whether or not she's capable of articulating that herself, is that one day she herself will kind of fit the mold that her mother has left her, has made for her. And I find that really fascinating. Also, this kind of turning point in a parent-child relationship where you find yourself having to take care of someone who used to take care of you, and you're reevaluating the care that you received in the light of the care that you're trying to give. So Gifty is caring for her mother through her depression, which of course makes her reflect on her childhood and the distance that was imposed by her mother. So those moments, I think, create a lot of interesting tension in a book. I also really just love books that deal with mother-daughter relationships generally.
In these two books, characters have difficulty hugging and being hugged, touching. And in the course of my life, I have found myself in groups where hugging is an inevitable and natural conclusion to a meeting, say, or to a revelation. And I found it fascinating that you, in your work, try to restore the essential difficulty of touching without knowing, that it doesn't go without saying that a meaningful conversation is concluded with a hug. It may take, as a character mentions, years to be known. And I found that very interesting and difficult to do for a fiction writer, where characters seem to know each other as soon as they meet on the same page. Gifty, in particular, takes a great deal of time before she can find people she can know, who she can allow to know her, and she gets repeatedly punished by her friends, who feel that she is withholding herself.
Yes, you're right. Gifty is an incredibly reticent character. She's built these defenses in great part because she experienced so much trauma as a child. What I think of as absences, her father, her brother, these two physical absences, but also her mother, who's emotionally distant as well. And so in order to kind of try to cope with that, Gifty has become a person who's incredibly withholding. And even beyond that, I think culturally, she wasn't necessarily accustomed to the level of kind of emotional availability of her friends in college and grad school and so on. So it takes her a little longer to come out of her shell.
Novels tend to be places where people meet by accident and form immediate and coherent relationships, often as the revelation to a secret. In the first book, there's a missing ring or amulet worn around the neck that shines like gold, that defines a relation between two sisters who have never known each other. My guest is Yaa Jessie. She's written only two books. Those are Homegoing and Transcendent Kingdom. I find that in your books, the characters, rather than amalgamating, are exploring their differences as you explore their differences and distances.
As a writer, I'm not big on pre-planning. So I do often feel as though I'm figuring out the characters as they reveal themselves on the page.
Both of these books have been bestsellers and inspired a lot of conversation. You've been interviewed about them many times. And I want to ask, when you are speaking to a white person about Homegoing, is there a difference in the way that happens between when you're speaking to a white person, a white reader, or a black reader, a person of color? What is the relation of race to the response to your writing?
Well, I suppose that black people, whether or not they, you know, agree with my perception of things, at least have a kind of baseline understanding of the subject matter that I'm interested in, and are themselves interested in it or have encountered it in some way. And so there's less of this idea that that my books are meant to educate rather than an idea that that you're seeing yourself or your stories or things that you've thought about reflected back to you through them. So that might be the biggest difference.
Can you tell me how you think a conversation involving race can be conducted? It is right now such an important subject, and at the same time, such a demanding and difficult subject.
I'm not sure how to answer that question. It is a difficult one to try to approach, and I think so many times we find ourselves kind of stumbling through it. But I suppose my feeling is that at least we're starting now in ways that we weren't before, even 10 years ago.
Now, I didn't exactly feel that you were telling me things I didn't know. Rather, I felt you were telling me things that I had to know, and that having read, say, Beloved and many other novels that center on issues of slavery. I mean, I don't think to this day I will ever recover from Toni Morrison writing about the bit that's put in the mouths of people enslaved to prevent them from speaking. I mean, these are things that novelists can bring intensity and drama to that mere facts could never convey, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's what's really special about fiction, is that it allows you to kind of see the image in your own head in a way that you can't quite get to when you're just reading a historical text or reading a piece of nonfiction. There's kind of a breaking of a barrier, I think, when you use your imagination.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Yaa Jessie about her two novels, the more recent Transcendent Kingdom and the first Homegoing. And we're talking in two shows because I had not read her before. I feel that in reading these two books, I've really discovered a writer whose work interests and fascinates me, both as literature and by moral and historical investigation. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Yad Jassy about her two books, Transcendent Kingdom and Homegoing. I know that the experience of traveling all over the world talking about homegoing led you to feel concern about your progress on the new book. And you seem to be, if I understand it, grateful that now you're not traveling, but doing many interviews by phone or on the computer. And I think this has been a very demanding thing in the lives of many, many writers. How have you found a way of continuing to work, given the fact that you attained an immediate, impressive popularity?
Yeah, it was harder than I expected, in part because I had always written and I kind of took writing for granted in some ways. I just, I was the kind of person who was always working on something. And so then to be in this place where I was so busy that I wasn't writing every day, it took me out of myself in some way. And I think the way to return to the writing, the path that I took to return to the writing involved mainly just learning how to say no to things that kept me from it. So I ended up doing a couple of residencies to write Transcendent Kingdom. One was in Wyoming on a ranch just for a couple of weeks. And then another was in Berlin for several months. And I think that helped me to find some quiet again.
Now tell me, you'd been at two of the most important places I know of for a writer to be. Stanford has a magnificent writing program, world famous, and you were an undergraduate there, majoring in English, and then you went to the Iowa Writers Program, where you were accepted into the fiction writing program and worked with many great writers. Now, for one reason or another, I too, once I entered college, was surrounded by writers, and it changed everything about the way I read and the depth with which I required myself to read. What was it like to work with so many interesting and famous writers? And did you allow yourself to read their work when you were working with them?
It was indescribably wonderful, I think. I did allow myself to read their work before I ended up working with them. In fact, when I found out I was accepted into Iowa, I made sure to read at least one book by each of the professors there that I hadn't read before. And I think there's something really wonderful for a young writer to start to get to interact with working writers and to recognize that the profession is an attainable one and a lived one.
You also worked with another of my favorite writers and people, Marilyn Robinson. I'm often asked, where should I go to study writing. Do you believe in writing programs?
I do believe in writing programs, especially writing programs like Iowa. I think, you know, beyond just the fact that they give you the time that you need to work, you meet a bunch of wonderful writers and thinkers. And I think the sharpening of your work happens through reading other people's work. And so to be in a context like that, where you are weekly engaging with literature and with professors who have written beautiful, challenging books themselves, it only makes you a better writer.
A writer who's been exploring the essay, John DeGatta, invited me to his nonfiction class in Iowa, and I have to say that in the years since I've been there, I've seen many of the writers be published, and I'm tremendously interested in their work. What have you discovered about the relationship of your personality to your work?
Generally, I'm pretty private, and so there's a kind of public-facing aspect to the published part of a writing career that took some getting used to for me. And I suppose that if someone were meeting me in the context of an event, it would be a very different situation than someone who met me, you know, organically.
For me, I feel that I met you organically by reading your novels. I was totally unprepared for what I'd be reading. And let me say again to you and to my listeners that I was thrilled by the two novels by my guest, Yajesi, Transcendent Kingdom and Homegoing. I must say that I feel that I know so much more about Ghana, about moving from a place like Ghana to a place like Alabama, where you grew up. Can you help and describe to me how a writer manages to move around in the many worlds surrounding her that she may not be aware of until she sees them?
Well, I think for me, part of the reason that I am able to write about so many different places is because of the way that I grew up in this kind of peripatetic nature. We moved a lot when I was a child, and very early on, I became interested in this idea of these crossroads or these kind of shadow selves that could exist, but were cut off for some reason. So who would I be if I were still in Ghana? Who would I be if I, you know, had stayed in Columbus, Ohio, where my family lived for a time? I didn't think about that when I was young as being kind of a work of the imagination, and yet, of course, it was.
I don't travel very much, and I never have, but I feel like the reading of books has exposed me to world after world after world and widened my horizons. I'm always grateful, as I am this week, to meet a writer, to read a writer that I haven't read before. In this case, that writer is Yajesi. I want once again to spell the name, because I'm serious. I think you should be reading these books. The author's name is Yajesi. That's spelled Yaagysi. And I want to say that I had a reading experience that brought me to a place of recognition that I hadn't been to in a very long time. But I have to say, I had never been in Ghana before or imagined what it would be like to be brought on one of the long ships from Ghana to America as a slave, or even to imagine what it's like to move to America from Ghana and write about something that allows people to experience a lived life within the pages of your books. How important is that to you?
It's everything to me. I think it's the beauty of reading, certainly, but also the beauty of writing is those moments where you feel as though you are seeing yourself or recognizing something articulated that you didn't know that you wanted to recognize, or didn't know that you wanted to articulate. It's indescribable. I have no language for it, really, but it's the best feeling.
Well, I want to tell you that I spent every moment of the last weeks in something like your company, reading your books, and I thought that they were explosively powerful and brilliant and beautiful. I've been talking with Yah Jesse, author most recently of The Transcendent Kingdom. Both of her books are published in paperback by Vintage. The first was called Homegoing. And thank you, Yah, for joining me.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was a pleasure.
It really was my pleasure. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are each taping remotely, so you may hear unusual sounds, pauses in the linkage between one part of the country and another, but I think this was a conversation that was a great honor for me to have and to explore the work of what is, for me, a new and great writer. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also last week's show, available at Apple, Spotify, and virtually every other podcast service globally. It can also be listened to on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my Bookworm show collaborators, Alan Howard, who makes the show coherent with his editing, and Sean Sullivan, who brings my mind to the guest as producer figure. These are called show collaborators, but this is what they do for me. An engineer, PJ Shahamat, who seems very sensitive to tone and sound, timbre. I'm very grateful to him. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm. We are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.